We've got also Alberto Urueta. We have not just one, but two McConnells here with us today. Adrian, somehow we've multiplied the family. How is that even possible? How do we do that?
Yeah, it's impressive, Steve. We've never had them on in the same room. We've once had Sean McConnell before Cade McConnell's UTEP home opener and home debut as a starting quarterback. And then we've had Cade on plenty of times before in the past.
Cade, are you excited about having your dad join you today?
Oh, of course. I've been trying to get him to come up here to a practice, and he's been trying to, but you know, he's a teacher, PE teacher. He's got work throughout the week, so they got spring break this week. We can get him up here to come out and kind of see what's going on right now in spring ball, which is cool. And then it's just a little cherry on top to have him in the studio today.
Don't you love how California has spring break like the first week of April and not March like everybody else in America, it seems like?
Yeah, it's a little different. It's definitely different, especially when, you know, for university, everybody's spring break is even earlier than that. So
yeah,
I mean, our spring break was almost a month ago, and they're just now getting on spring break. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy too, because since EPISD went year round, it used to be a 1 week vacation. Now it's 2 weeks in spring break. So yeah, the kids get two, but it just goes to show you that everybody's a little different no matter where it is. But this is fun because when you normally come into the studio, your dad, Sean, will listen in, text during the show and be a part of it. Today, it's like real time, and he can jump on the microphone and be a part of the program there as well.
That's right. We might have to buckle up and strap in, because he definitely, whenever he listens, he's got a whole lot to say on text, so we'll see if he has just as much to say when we get on the air today.
Oh, so he's got opinions, what you're telling me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, or comments, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we were talking about some of the Chihuahuas deals when I was on last Tuesday and stuff like that. Just whatever's going on the topic, we're always having a conversation, you know, during the show, which is good, and now it's nice to have him here in studio.
Has he bought you the 9 game season ticket plan yet?
Not yet, but we actually did talk about that recently, and he said he was going to. So, Dad, first of all, thank you. But we're definitely gonna make that happen. That way, when he comes up here, we can go and we can pick out one of those 9 games and use a couple of those tickets whenever needed.
Does he need extra convincing, or do you think that it's pretty much already a done deal? Should we get him to the ballpark while he's in town this week?
We should. I think that's a really good idea, because he's never been to Southwest Stadium.
He's gonna go tomorrow.
I think that's a great idea. It's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, look, he's going tonight?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Our boy Pinky, Steve.
Oh, Pinky's taking care of him tonight.
He came in clutch with him.
Well, here I was going to invite him to one of our suites, but I mean, hey, if Pinky's going to be taking care of him, then that's good too. He's got a choice. Now he's got a choice, because Pinky came to meet Cade, and he ends up getting to see Cade and his dad, Sean. It's like a bonus for Pinky today.
It is. It is, Steve.
Did Pinky
show up? He was hanging out in the parking lot today.
Oh, my. Like a stalker?
Yes, like a stalker.
Oh, that's awful.
This is not encouraged by any, especially some of our listeners out there. This is not encouraged.
Please, if you ever want to meet us, do not stalk the front parking lot of the radio station. That is just, it's not a good idea.
Regardless, we did see Pinky in the parking lot, and we got a great little selfie photo, all three of us. So, I mean, everything's all good over here.
Was he wearing the New Mexico license plates?
Oh, yeah. He made sure to say stop, come back, went into his car, made sure to get the license plates.
Of course.
Never missing without those.
Can you imagine traveling with those? Like, I mean, it's one thing if you have them, but then you imagine just keeping them in your car because you never know when you're going to have a chance for a choice encounter with somebody, and you want to always break out the the license plate necklace when you have a chance?
I think it's awesome that, you know, we all have those things we put in the back of our car, like that, you know, like something's got to stay
like
in
a
the
spare
back
tire?
Seat. Yeah. Like,
A charger, a phone charger?
Right. That's something like that. Like something useful or something you feel like you need in your car. Pinky's like, I just got to have my license plates. I just not going to live without them, which I think is awesome.
Like, I mean, in my car, here's what I have. My spares include a sunshade, a flashlight in case it's dark and I need to see something, and I've got one of those little portable air, it will put air in the tires.
Right.
I've got that. That's it.
Right.
It's enough.
I got a little basket that like goes under in the back seat of my car, and it's got, you know, like a phone charger and something else for my car. I think maybe a flashlight or something like that, but it's small. It's compact. Yes. I don't want anything in there, and Pinky's just hanging license plates up in the back.
I was going to say, I mean, when you imagine if you're like, you know what? I mean, I know I got the necessities, but really I need my license plate collection of UTEP orange or yellow license plates from New Mexico as really what is a necessity. I mean, it's crazy.
He's one of a kind.
He is. And he's offering an extra ticket to your dad, so your dad gets to go to opening night tonight. That's going to be fun.
It's absolutely awesome.
Gets to be guests of Pinky. How great is that?
It's honestly celebrity status at that point.
It is. How is spring ball going? Give us an update.
No, it's going really well. We're about to start, we call it, instead of calling it practice seven tomorrow, we call it opportunities because every practice is an opportunity to go out and get 1% better and build yourself. So we start opportunity seven tomorrow with six under our belt. I'm happy with where we're at right now.
It's good.
I'm happy with where we're at, but I want to see us really continue to build. I feel like we're still in like that gelling stage, but the truth is, you know, we're over a third way done with spring ball now, and now it's time to start springing ourselves in, you know, forward and really start to catch stride. So I don't think we're very far away from doing that, but we need to, you know, come together just a bit more and really start upping things.
Are you making the most of your opportunities so far through the first six of them?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of guys have done a really good job of taking advantage of the time that we have out there. I know I've done my best to try to, you know, squeeze every minute, every rep that I get out there just to try to, you know, feel more comfortable under things. And we talk about it all the time, but like learning an offense, it doesn't matter which kind of offense, you know, you're in as a quarterback, is dense. Like it's a lot to do. But the faster you're able to learn it, the more you're able to help other people along, and the more you're able to, you know, tune into those fine intricacies that win and lose you games. And that's the goal right now, is get to that point to where you can really start to master stuff.
Well, listen, every UTEP returnee is all in the same boat. Even if you started, doesn't matter what, you're all trying to make a first impression on an entirely new coaching staff. And that's the challenge. It's crazy because you have all the experience, yet you're the one that probably is auditioning right now more than everybody else, because this coaching staff already knows a good chunk of who they brought in with them. And yet for you, it's trying to seize that opportunity, so to speak.
100%. And not only is it seizing the opportunity with, you know, how fast can I learn this or integrate myself and, you know, come up to the people that maybe already know the offense, but it's also, it's hey, can I show the coaches that as we go through spring ball that I'm able to sustain and then continue to grow? And that goes through all facets, not just knowing, you know, an offense or a defense, but it's also bringing people along leadership-wise, making sure the energy and intensity is up during practice and bringing people up that way, and then being able to take care of your body and show the coaches, hey, I can go through football for, you know, a set period, extended amount of time, and stay healthy.
Cade, what have you learned about yourself as a competitor through this spring ball period? Because you've talked a lot about how you've been a very ultra-competitive guy when it comes to playing football and being in that quarterback room. What have you learned about yourself as far as being a competitor in this spring ball period?
I think one thing that this spring ball has taught me and has kind of brought to light is, especially in my competitiveness, is how much it takes everything. Like, it takes everything in order to be successful. It doesn't take turning it on when practice starts and the whistle blows. It takes all the stuff in the background. It takes taking care of your body, going back and having, you know, whether it's just thinking about it or thinking about it at night, hey, how can I get my feet better? How can I do this? How can I do that? And every little bit and piece that you can put towards yourself, you know, in competition with other people and trying to elevate yourself, that's kind of what I've learned. Like, Coach Walden and his staff preach the details about everything that we do, not just about football, about everything off the field, you know, on the field, in the classroom. It doesn't matter. And I feel like that's the part of the competitive side that's come out in me this spring ball, with them highlighting a lot of those things, is I'm paying attention to a lot more of the little things off the field as well as on the field.
Can you imagine, though, this is a crash course for you, because essentially it's almost like cramming an entire semester into 2 months. First month would be spring ball. Second month is fall practice. And maybe you get a chance to have a little tutoring in the summer when you can work on it. So for the most part, you have to learn an entire offense, and a defense for that matter, for those on defense, in 2 months. Not easy when you talk about a new coaching staff coming in and overhauling everything.
No, it's not easy, but nobody that we're playing, you know, this entire season cares. Nobody True. That's on the other side of the ball cares that we have to learn it in 2 months. Nobody that, you know, else in the country cares. The coaches, they don't care that we only have 2 months. The real, you know, question is, can you get it done? Can you learn it? Can you execute it? And can you go out and deliver the product that we're supposed to deliver out on the field? And at the end of the day, Steve, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. All right. We got a lot to talk about today on the show with Cade, with Sean. He's going to join us as well. Sean Merriman's going to stop on the program and join us on the Longhorn Distributing Hotline coming up here to begin hour one at 4:20. At 5 o'clock, I'm excited about this too. A brand new book out. It is, if you love baseball history, this is really cool. It's the 100th anniversary of the 1924 World Series where the Washington Senators beat the New York Giants. We're talking about, like, the greats of the game. Walter Johnson pitched for Washington. We've got an author of a brand-new book about this. He's going to join us live at 5 on the Longhorn Distributing Hotline. Then we're going to have more with Cade, more with Sean, and Tim Haggerty is going to be with us from the ballpark coming up in our 6 o'clock hour. So we got a lot in store for you. Now, before we get to Sean and before we continue with Cade, I do need to talk about some sad news we received today and actually over the weekend. Juden Smith, who played for UTEP minor basketball from 1981 to 1986, passed away over the weekend after a brief bout with cancer out at his home in Houston, Texas. Now, for those of you who only heard the stories about Juden, Juden was nicknamed the Beast because that's exactly what he was. He was an undersized forward at 6'5", 6'6", and really kind of played that hybrid guard forward position. He was great as a 2 and a 3, and somebody who was part of the heart and soul of the UTEP minor men's basketball run in those early 80s, early to mid-80s for that matter. In fact, the last 3 years for Juden, 84, 85, and 86, they went to the NCAA tournament all 3 seasons. He was the glue guy, never somebody who would speak out, kind of a quiet person to himself, much like Ken Lockhart, who we lost recently as well, but somebody who just had the ability to play with the kind of intensity that Don Haskins loved. He wore number 21. He was a fan favorite. Unfortunately, never made it back to UTEP after he graduated because it just wasn't his style. He wasn't somebody that wanted to make public appearances. In fact, when everybody got together here back in February for the statue, Juden was not able to make it. None of us knew at the time that he was battling cancer. And then we get the news over the weekend that he passed away. And just really tough for a lot of us. Those that grew up in the 80s, grew up watching this basketball team win championships, hang banners, go to the NCAA tournament. A lot of you realize that with players like Dave Feitel, players like Lester Goodwin, and then we go on and on with the list, Soup Campbell, Fred Reynolds, eventually you had guys like Jeep Jackson, Tim Hardaway, Antonio Davis, Greg Foster. Juden Smith was the Beast. He was a glue guy. He was a vital part of those Don Haskins teams, along with Quentin Gates and everybody else. And hard to believe that he is also gone, as we found that out here just over the weekend.
Yeah, such sad news, Steve, and what an icon he was to the history of UTEP basketball. Juden Smith, in his career through his 4 years at UTEP, averaged double figures in scoring per game, and this is a guy who played significant minutes as even a freshman, which is, of course, as you know, Don Haskins, he's not going to throw out a freshman unless they've earned that playing time, earned the opportunity, and that's what Juden Smith did in 1981 when he first came onto the scene. With the minors. His final season as a senior averaged 13 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists, so was a complete player on both ends of the court and was just a fantastic piece on those teams. I mean, you think about it, those 84 teams, the 83 team, and the final season when he was there, 85-86, just a remarkable runs for Juden Smith and those teams.
Yeah, and we're losing them, and it's sad because, again, it's 40 years ago, but for a lot of us, seems like it was just yesterday. And now, again, another loss of a minor great. All right, good start to the show. When we come back, we've got Sean Merriman, former 3-time NFL All-Pro. He's the founder of Lights Out Extreme Fighting. They've got a big event coming up this weekend. Sean's going to tell us about that, talk a little football as well, and to keep things moving here on the program. First, though, let's go to Charlie One and get this traffic update. Teen is going to be happening this Saturday night. Danny Ramirez, Richie Palomino, the main event of the pro card. A lot of big bouts. And with us right now, a man who's joined us numerous times in the past, including Radio Row at Super Bowl week. And now he gets a chance to talk a little bit about his big event, Lights Out 15, this Saturday. We're talking about a former NFL All-Pro, Sean Merriman. Sean, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you. And again, another big night of extreme fighting coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, man, same here, and always thanks for having me on, and good seeing you guys down at Radio Row. I think that was probably one of the biggest radio roles I've seen in my 15 years almost of going to the Super Bowl. It was great. But, yeah, we got a huge fight this Saturday, April 6th. We'll be in Long Beach, California, live on Fubo Sports, Fubo TV. We'll also be on Bally's as well. If you guys got Bally's out there, they're running our last fight, LXF 14, which is a big card. But this one, man, we got 18 fights lined up tonight. This is probably our longest night from, like, 5 p.m., to 10 p.m. It goes 6 p.m. Pacific. It's live on Fubo Sports. You guys don't want to miss this one. One of the guys you just said is Daniel Ramirez and Richie Palomino. Just these two is going to get after it. I want everybody to make sure they pay attention to the co-main event also. Lazaro Valdez, the Cuban hunter. This dude is, I don't know how long I'm going to be to keep him. You know, he might be a fight or two for us and also the UFC, but he is very excited and going to put on a show.
Sean, do you feel like this, you know, what you've seen recently in Lights Out and the partnerships that you guys have had through streaming platforms, do you feel like the popularity of MMA is just continuing to soar upward and trend upward with all the different events that you guys have been a part of?
Yeah, man. And, you know, for us, right, because it's a very crowded market. There are some really good promotions out there. We're just happy to be one of the most known outside of the big one or two. And so for us, that's cool to see. And, you know, we're getting fighters calling us from all over the country, and it wasn't always like that, right? It was about, first of all, being known. You got promotions been around for 7, 10-plus years, so they got some years on us. But, you know, the way we've come in and the viewership numbers we've had over the last, you know, really a year and a half or so has just been incredible. I mean, if you go to Bally's right now, it's probably playing on, you know, all the regionals in the country. So, you know, when you have that type of visibility, fighters want to come and put on a show because ultimately we know that they want to have that shot at the UFC and we want to give them that opportunity.
When you formed Lights Out and really had the vision for what you, you know, where we are right now, you tell me, what has been the secret to your success being able to kind of hit the ground running, find the right streaming partners, the fighters, and then ultimately put this thing on the fast track?
I think the biggest thing, for one, I've been around this sport for 17 years. Back when I started training with, you know, Randy Couture and Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell, I was around these guys in the mid-2000s, so I knew the sport very well. That means I know all the gyms, I know all the managers and coaches. You know, they know me, obviously, if not from watching football. They've seen me in the gym before. So that part of it has been great. And also, too, you know, when I retired, I got straight into TV, right? I was at NFL Network and Fox Sports and ESPN, and I was fortunate enough to pick up, you know, some of the best things about working at big networks. And so by the time we launched, we looked like we've been up and running for a long time because of my, you know, just background in TV and being in the sport for so long. And then, too, obviously, getting an opportunity to come and talk to you guys and talk to the people out there listening about what we got coming. That way we're putting people on notice, right? They can flick on, you know, I guarantee, and I don't know the schedule. I don't have it in front of me, but I can guarantee you that if you guys are looking at Bally's or somewhere in your Bally's network right now, or Fubo, it's Lights Out is probably on somewhere. So that's, when you have that amount of visibility, you have pretty strong and fast growth.
Sean, you talked about the visibility. It's also the accessibility, right? Because there's a lot of people who got a chance here locally to watch, you know, the last Lights Out fight, which was the 14, where AJ Hodgkins, who fights out of here in El Paso, he got to be a part of it, and it was really accessible. It's a free, you can watch it really for free on most streaming platforms like Roku TV. You mentioned Fubo Sports as well. You could even watch it Samsung TV. But the point is, there's a lot of accessibility to watch Lights Out Extreme Fighting, and you're not having to pay any money to watch these big events.
That's the biggest thing, man. Look, you know, having exclusive stuff or subscription is great, but we realized that we had to get out there in a major way, and that's for everybody to access us. In fact, and I'll drop the ball to you guys here, through about 3 weeks from now, I'll be launching Lights Out Sports, which is a multi-sports platform that you'll also be able to get on every major TV and streaming service. I'll be launching with 15 channels or so, and Lights Out Fights will be there, right? We'll have it live there and the replays on Fubo and some of these other great streaming platforms. So my thing was, to me personally, is that to make sure that everybody got a chance to see our fight and access it. And speaking of AJ, I mean, he showed his butt, man. His opponent that he had last fight was a Cain Velasquez student. He was a Cain Velasquez is his coach. and he was well coached, man. So AJ got out of that one clean, had a big finish to a very, very good fighter, man. So I'm just watching him get better each and every fight. I just ran into him. I was getting some rounds on the bag over at Top Rank in Vegas. He was in there working. He's constantly working, man. And that's that football spirit in him. That's that football background, that discipline, and just want to continuously get better, man. So I expect big things out of him in this sport.
Meanwhile, I went ahead and I was looking on Spectrum. Bally's is channel 27 locally. We get a lot of Texas sports, but sure enough, Lights Out Extreme Fighting on the list for Thursday. So yes, you're right. All over the guide, all over the channel. That's what it's all about. And I'm curious, with all of your involvement with what you've been able to do with Lights Out Extreme Fighting, how much are you paying attention these days to the NFL itself? Or are you pretty much 100% right now just putting all your time into Lights Out?
Look, Bob, the only time I walked away from the game I didn't watch it was probably the 6 months after I retired. that was about it. After that, man, you just become a fan of just watching. And because I've watched so many hours of film in my life, that it's hard for me not to watch games now and break down everything that's going from wide receiver to wide receiver, from tackle to tackle. And so I analyze everything. So, yeah, you can ask me about every team in the NFL, and I can tell you everything about what's going on in every roster move. And I'm just – I live my dream, and now I get a chance to analyze this up-and-coming talent and see how the game is just progressing over the years.
Sean, April rolls around. We're talking about the NFL draft here in less than a month, of course, at the end of this month. What is the position group that intrigues you the most? Everybody's talking about, of course, the quarterbacks at the top of the first round, but is there another position group, or specifically the quarterback position group, that really intrigues you for this year's draft?
I think there's a – look, the quarterbacks are always going to be talked about because those are team needs right now. And we all know in this offensive-driven league now that if you don't have a standout quarterback, you can't win. It's not back in the day or 2000 when the Ravens won, right, averaging 11, 12 points a game. Those days are done, and it'll never go back. The NFL just loves points so much. That's not going to happen. So as far as quarterback needs, there's always a lot of hype, right? There's a lot of hype and which guy's going to do what, who's going to change around the organization, and how that's going to happen. So, yeah, the quarterbacks are going to be the most talked about, but this has got to be the deepest wide receiver class we've seen in a very long time. And I'm talking about, like, game-breaking guys that can come in and turn a team around right away. I don't think we've seen this set of wide receivers, this group, come in and can start right away and be an impact on every single team if they got drafted.
Former three-time All-Pro, founder of Lights Out Extreme Fighting, Sean Merriman, joining us here on the show. As Adrian was talking to you a moment ago about the draft, free agency has changed really the roster of a lot of teams right now. Which teams were you most impressed with, really, from how they took advantage of free agency, and who do you feel right now just didn't get the job done, and their team is actually worse now because of free agency?
Well, It's hard to say because you look at somebody like the Giants, right? Yeah, they lost to Saquon, but they got Brian Burns. They added somebody on the opposite side of Tabadou. Is that his name, Tabadou? Right? Mm-hmm. And so they made some jumps, but then again, look, the draft is still here. So if you're looking at the Jets made some moves now. Aaron Rodgers coming back. Now they got Mike Williams coming in there. God, man, there's been a lot of off-season moves. It's been crazy. I think that I haven't seen – well, I would say, to be honest, Dallas, man, because they haven't done anything this
Perfect.
Season, right? Because
– that's who I was – that's who I was teeing you up with, Sean. I was waiting for you to throw the Cowboys out there. I really was.
You were poking at me to see who what I knew about the Cowboys down there, but – Let me tell you, man, the Cowboys, as much as people want to talk about Jerry Jones this, Jerry Jones that, they're no doubt a top five roster in the NFL. When you look at them from top to bottom, wide receiver, You know, look at the defense and who they got at cornerback and Micah Parsons, all that. So I don't think there needs to be a lot of moves. So they were right about that. So they don't need to do a lot of moves because they also have some big contracts that's coming up, including Dak. You know, it's coming up. CeeDee Lamb is going to get paid at some point. Micah Parsons is going to get paid this next year or so. So you look across the board, they almost can't make a lot of moves because they already have a top five roster with about three or four guys that's going to get blockbuster contracts in the next year or two. So you can't really, you're stuck.
Sean, last time we saw you in Vegas, we asked you about the Chargers. This time I'll ask you about one of your other teams in the Bills. They, this offseason, also, kind of similar to the Cowboys, didn't do a lot on their end in free agency here in the offseason. What do you think about what they're doing right now? Do they have something kind of up their sleeves? Is it just about keeping and retaining their roster intact and the nucleus moving forward for this group?
That's what it is. I think they it's addition by subtraction with them. They got some guys who's older, who's going to be moving on. They got some talent there that just that got people. Guys got hurt. They went down for the season. It's going to be coming back. So they're another one, right? Where do you get better at with them? Because truthfully, and to be quite honest, I thought they were better than the Kansas City Chiefs, right? They were a better team, but they lost. So what one player could you add there that's going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs now? You can't because they should have won that game. So they're another one, right? They're a great roster. You got a franchise quarterback. You got Diggs there. And I know the offseason drama that's always talked about and, you know, is he going and what's happening there? I mean, they're stacked as a team. So you got some guys coming back healthy and you got some older guys who are just moving on. So it's almost one of those things, addition by subtraction, and that's what's happening.
Before I let you go, Lights Out 15 this Saturday night. We talked about that at the start of the show. We'll mention it again out in Long Beach. Sean, for you, is the plan to try to have one event per month and take that model, or how many live events do you want to have per year?
I would like to finish out the rest of this year with one a month, and hopefully going into 2025, we can get two in a month. I would love to do anywhere between 20 to 24 events a year. I think that's the sweet spot where, you know, we're giving fans, constant content. We're giving more fighters a chance on a biweekly basis. That's my goal. And then also, too, to make sure that we have massive, massive distribution where, like I said before, Bally's and all these guys, you look at the lineups, we're all over the place. But more, I want, you know, everybody to be able to see us, not only in the U.S., but all over the world. And so that's been something that's really important to me.
Could we see a card come to El Paso? And if so, could we see a guy like AJ headline it?
No doubt. I mean, I would not come to El Paso without AJ being a big part of that card. I know how much he means to the area down there, the people that's watched him go through the progress and just become a better fighter in his work ethic. And I also know that people love fighting down there. I know that for sure. And I would love to bring an event out there and blow it up, man, so everybody can come and see Lights Out Extreme fighting in person.
Terrific stuff. Sean, great to have you back on the program. We'll look forward to talking to you again right back here real soon.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Sean Merriman, folks, as we continue on Sports Talk. It's 35 past. Let's do Sports Center. Then we'll take the break. Come back with plenty more as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso.
Adrian brought us.
Start of hour number two. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a fun one for us. And hey, with opening night tonight for the Chihuahuas at home at Southwest University Park, baseball is in the air. And we are going to keep things moving right now with a brand new book out on the Washington Senators from 1924. That's right. 100 years ago, the team of destiny, Walter Johnson, Clark Griffin, Bucky Harris, and the Senators, has given Gary Sarnoff the opportunity to take us back in time 100 years and relive the season that led to the Senators winning the 1924 World Series. And Gary joins us live on the program right now as we continue. Gary, welcome to Sports Talk. Great to have you on here in El Paso. And you picked a subject that I think a lot of our listeners might be interested in because it's a team that had a lot of big names on it. It was a historic season, And nobody's really looked back at those 1924 Senators in the past. So great opportunity for you to relive those memories.
Sure is. It's a team that's gotten lost in history because the Senators, Washington, went so long without having a baseball team. It went 33 years in between franchises before the Montreal Expos became the Washington Nationals. And you're absolutely right. This is a team that had four Hall of Famers, and if you count the team president, co-owner Clark Griffith, that makes five Hall of Famers. The other Hall of Famers were Bucky Harris, the starting second baseman and manager, Goose Goslin, the starting left fielder, Sam Rice in right field, and the great Walter Johnson, great pitcher, the Big Train.
Matter of fact, a guy that's one of the all-time great pitchers, but up until that season had never had the opportunity to pitch into a World Series, which was something that changed in that 1924 season. In fact, as great a pitcher as he was prior years, those last 3 years prior to, he was more of an aging pitcher that seemed like he lost his fastball, right?
That's correct, because he had suffered an arm injury in 1920, and he pitched with a sore arm for the next three seasons following that. So, yes, you're absolutely right. People thought he was washed up, and people thought the great Walter Johnson was going to be the greatest player to ever play in the majors, to never go to a World Series, never pitch for a pennant winner. Fortunately for Walter Johnson, it all came together in 1924.
Sure did. Gary, since Babe Ruth had arrived in New York a few years prior to, and then you talk about the domination that the Yanks had for much of the 20s and 30s, you know, you look at this Senators run, and you tell me, was it just one of those seasons when everything clicked the right way and a team that was filled with the future Hall of Famers put it all together and was able to win that pennant?
Well, people didn't realize how good Washington really was because they had Goose Goslin, who's only 23 years old and entering his prime, and Bucky Harris is a fiery leader, and Walter Johnson had a comeback season. So, yeah, that was a team. Things definitely did click for them. They were definitely a team of destiny. But it happened so quickly for them. It happened in one season because they had a losing record in 1923 and weren't expected to be good in 1924. So it did click for them and it did come together, but they continued to be good. They won the pennant again in 1925 and they were contenders for the next few years. And then in 1933, they won another pennant.
When you, again, just more on the Senators right there, and you see kind of the, I would say kind of the legacy, would you consider them a little dynasty this early on into what they were able to do and just all their success? Or how would you kind of characterize them and how their like lasting impression on this era of baseball?
They were a good team. I don't know if they were quite a dynasty. They won two pennants in a row, back-to-back years, 1924 and 1925. Connie Mack said you had to win three in a row to be a dynasty. So I don't know if they were quite a dynasty, but they were very good. It was their best era. You know, if you know anything about the Washington Senators, you know that they were perennial losers. I mean, they were usually not very good and usually finished in the second division, the lower half of the American League standings. However, for 10 years, from 1924 to 1933, they won three pennants, a world championship. They had winning records, were contenders. They had Hall of Famers, so and a lot of good ballplayers. So I call this era the best in Washington baseball history.
The book is Team of Destiny, Walter Johnson, Clark Griffith, Bucky Harris, and the 1924 Washington Senators. Gary Sarnoff joining us here on Sports Talk as we continue. By the way, speaking of Bucky Harris, 27 years old, managing a team that was, I mean, you don't find many 20-year-old, 27-year-old managers now. Even in the 1920s, that was something that was pretty unheard of for the time, wasn't it?
It sure was. Player managers were uncommon. Ty Cobb was a manager. Tris Speaker was a manager. So player managers were uncommon. However, they were seasoned veterans who were at least 30 years old or older. And here was Bucky Harris, only 27 years old, four full seasons of Major League playing experience prior to the 1924 season, and he's handed the managerial job right before the start of spring training because Clark Griffith, couldn't swing a deal for Eddie Collins, and also offered the job to a few former managers who were uninterested in the job. So he went with Bucky Harrison. It turned out to be a great decision.
Yeah, it really did. By the way, Goose Gosselin that year hit .344, 12 home runs, 129 RBIs, 15 stolen bases. And by the way, he was 23 years of age. And that's kind of the fun part, too, is to see the roster, see the production. They had a little bit of everything, didn't they? Because even though they had Walter Johnson, they had Sam Rice in the outfield as well. You mentioned Harris at 27, who still batted .268. And how do you – I mean – in those days, you think about it, you're the starting second baseman, you're 27 years old, yet you also have to be the one to decide when to make pitching changes, when to bring players in off the bench. I think we take that for granted. It's so difficult to be a manager, let alone a player manager these days.
Yeah, it sure is, you know, especially for a 27-year-old to have that pressure, that kind of pressure with not much play, with not much major league playing experience. So for sure it was, but Harris had a pretty good idea what to do. He was a fiery player. He led by example. Most of the players were older than he was, but he was still very highly respected by his teammates because he worked hard and he hustled and he was so fiery. And, you know, in his heart, what really something he really had going for them and for himself was in his heart, he really believed he was managing a contender. He really thought Washington was going to contend in 1924. He was sure he had a good baseball team heading into that season. And that kind of belief, you know, to believe in yourself like that, believe in the team, that rubbed off on his team, on his players.
Gary, this is a story you've been researching since you were in high school. I mean, you've been fascinated with this for much of your adult life. Tell me, what was it about this 24 Senators team that fascinated you for so many years to eventually write the book?
Well, because Washington never had, first of all, Washington in general, just the Washington Senators, mostly had losing seasons. I mean, they had a tough time competing in the American League, had a tough time competing with the New York Yankees, never even came close to the Yankees in the standings. So I think the fact that Washington had a checkered history, had more losing teams than winning teams, and the fact that it came together for them this year, they challenged the Yankees, they finished ahead of the Yankees, which was unbelievable. It was also the fact that they had never won before that as well. They had never won a pennant prior to 1924. And I think the story about Bucky Harris is great. Just the fact that he was so young, you know, just was expected, was thought to be unqualified, was believed to be heading for a losing season. Most writers thought that he's being set up to fail because the Senators made no roster moves after the 1923 season. So he basically had the same team that had finished with a losing record the year before. But I think best of all, Walter Johnson. Here was a veteran, 36 years old, heading into his 18th major league season, never pitched for a pennant winner, was so great, you know, was in his prime, 1912 up to 1920, was just so outstanding, was so great, and people always said, oh, if Walter Johnson only pitched for a great team, the records he would have set. You know, just the fact that Walter Johnson finally got to pitch for a winner.
Not only that, he had such a great season, he ended up pitching for three more years after that. So it went from having a retirement campaign to basically giving him a whole new lease on life as a big leaguer.
Yeah, it sure did. Going into the 1924 season, he informed team president Clark Griffith through a letter that 1924 would be his last season. He was going to retire, move to California. He hoped to buy a Pacific Coast League team, a minor league team. He would run the team, manage the team, pitch every now and then. That was his plan. After the 1924 season, he was going to retire. And heading into that season, he was pretty sure Washington wasn't going to contend, wasn't going to win the pennant. And, yeah, and they won the World Series that year. And he pitched 1925. He had another 20-game win season and pitched in the World Series. The Senators again won the pennant. And he pitched for two more seasons after that. 1927 was his last year.
Yeah, it's a great story. It really is. And by the way, I mean, the World Series went seven. So you tell me, for when looking at the matchup and how even they were, both teams had really kind of a similar type of lineup, right? Because the Giants had a 26-year-old star in Frankie Frisch. They had a 24-year-old in Hack Wilson. Ross Youngs was 27. And, you know, just looking at that team, they were a dominant team in the National League and took Washington nearly to the brink.
Yeah, you got to remember that team had seven Hall of Famers, and they had won. 1924 was their fourth consecutive National League pennant winning season. So they were expected to win. They were the favorite over Washington heading into that World Series because they had experience, and because they had so much depth, they had seven Hall of Famers. And Giants manager John McGraw, he couldn't start all these guys in the same starting lineup day after day, so he had basically two starting lineups. He had a right-handed hitting starting lineup to face left-handed pitchers, and he had a left-handed hitting lineup to face right-handed pitchers, so that they were loaded, the Giants.
Meanwhile, I got to tell you something. So one of our listeners in Las Cruces, his great-grandfather is Travis Jackson. So Thomas, who calls into the show from time to time and has brought us some great Travis Jackson memorabilia over the years, directly related to him. He was a 20-year-old in that 1924 World Series. And here's an even better one for you. 2 years later, the Giants debut a 21-year-old second baseman named Andy Cohen. Huh. Andy's daughter works with us here at the radio station.
Is that right? Yeah, I know of Andy Cohen, and you got to also remember his brother, Sid Cohen, pitched for the Washington Senators.
That's right. Last person to strike out Babe Ruth in the American League and give up a home run, which he did in the same game.
I didn't realize he struck him out in that game as well. I knew about the home run.
Yeah. So, realistically, great stories. You tell me, before I wrap things up with you, you know, when we talk about Team of Destiny, Gary, and really a passion for you, what do you think our listeners are going to enjoy the most when they travel back in time and get to read this story you wrote about the 24 Senators?
Well, most people have told me who've read the book, they told me they feel like they were back in 1924 just by reading about the way baseball was back then and the way people lived and listened to radios or watched electronic scoreboards to follow the play-by-play or read the newspapers. So a lot of people felt that that was pretty neat, that they could feel like they were back in 1924. But I think they're going to enjoy the underdog story about the Washington Senators taking on the challenging the New York Yankees and Detroit Tigers, becoming contenders almost overnight during the 1924 season. So I think they're going to enjoy reading about the underdog, and they're certainly going to enjoy reading about Walter Johnson, for sure. And, of course, there's some good stories about Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth always has good stories about him, and Ty Cobb as well. So I think there's a lot in this book that people are going to enjoy.
Team of Destiny, you can pick it up at Amazon.com from Gary Sarnoff, who's been joining us on the show today. Gary, really appreciate the time. Thanks for giving us some great nuggets from the book. And, again, look forward to getting a chance to have our listeners read it, enjoy it, make a perfect Father's Day gift, and look forward to the next time we get to chat with you here on the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
You got it. So from Gary Sarnoff right over to Charlie One, standing by with the traffic update. Then we're back. More with Cade, more with Sean McConnell as we take you up till Chihuahua's baseball. Coming up right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Cade McConnell with us, our spring intern at UTEP, taking a break between, finally gets a day off during spring ball. His dad shows up as well. We got Sean McConnell here as well, sitting in. Prior to when we brought you on that day when you came into town, had you ever been on the radio years past from your own playing days? You do a lot of radio at that time?
Actually, I did. There was, you know, a local TV station that was always around at practices and games, and being a starting quarterback, I got the opportunity to do that, which was fun. It was always... I've got old VHS tapes. These guys joke with me all the time about, what's a VHS tape?
No. I'm going to interject here. First of all, no, we do not say that, okay? Secondly, I would love to be – I can't because I don't have it here, but – I have a video somewhere in my phone that I'd have to siphle through. We have a video of him on from one of the VHS where he is doing an interview in North Carolina at like one of their spring practices or something.
Yeah.
He sounds complete Southern accent. Sounds like he's been living in North Carolina for his entire life. Sounds nothing like he does right now. And we're like, is that our dad? Like that is it was unbelievable to me. He sounds nothing like him.
Oh, so you just felt like it was a different person.
100%. 100%.
Now, were you from Southern California originally?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Southern California, and that was I actually had to look at a map when East Carolina was recruiting me to find out where Greenville, North Carolina was.
And it didn't take you long to pick up the accent then, apparently,
it,
huh?
It happens quickly, and yeah. when you're immersed in that and your roommates are that, and it just happens.
It's a little different, too. Like, you know, I get on FaceTime with him and, you know, could talk. And people here don't have strong accents. But if, let's say I did go somewhere south where there was, you know, more accents. When I, at least I would hear, you know, them from California all the time on my phone and things yeah. like that. It's a little different now. But you said, you know, there wasn't FaceTime. You didn't, you know, you could call and stuff like that. But really all you heard was, you know, everybody that was from down there. And then I saw you on those tapes and you sounded like you were living in North Carolina for the last 30 years. And
my communication with home was on letter and collect phone calls.
Cade, Sean, can you give us your favorite story about your dad playing football, like that you've heard or that you know of? And then we'll flip it to you, Sean. What was your favorite moment this past year from Cade? So a two-part question.
Okay, I'll take this one first. So my dad has a lot of stories for me from his time playing at Cerritos and playing at East Carolina. But I think my favorite one was actually his stories that he's told me at Cerritos, where it was – similar to kind of my situation last year in a lot of ways, where he came in into Cerritos and he was kind of down on the depth chart, and then some crazy series of events end up happening to the guys in front of him. He gets thrust into a position, and then he never really, you know, looked back and kind of took it those next couple of years. And he was in the record books for passing yards in a season, and I think career passing yards, or, you know, I'm forgetting exactly what it was, Pops. But, you know, that was one of the coolest stories because I played at Cerritos. I was there. And now I went to UTEP and I was down on the depth chart, and some crazy series of events has happened to the guys ahead of me last season, and kind of got thrust into a role and then was able to run with it a little bit. And that was pretty cool to see. But the other one I do want to touch on, Adrian, is my favorite like sports memory. I don't even know if I've ever told you this, Dad, but like my favorite sports memory of my dad coaching us was when we were little. And, you know, it's on the baseball field, not even on the football field. Baseball field. I remember Dad and Coach Greg Danner, one of our family friends from back home, were like the two most animated little league, you know, type of baseball coaches there was. And we were learning how to field ground balls, and people were not bodying up the ball, right? Not getting over it. So if it took a hop, you take it off the chest and you pick it up and you throw it to first. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad getting so – we're like 9, 10 years old. And he's so mad. He's yelling at the whole team. You just get in front of the ball. It hits your chest. It doesn't even hurt. And he's having Coach Greg Danner hit ground balls at him, and it's taking hops, and my dad's just wearing it on the chest. And he's like, hit it harder, Greg. It's not going to hurt me. And Greg hits a ball and accidentally hits a line drive off the fungo. And you just took it right in the chest, and you had the biggest welt when we came home that night. But you weren't going to show it to anybody out there on the field because you wanted, you know, to show us to be tough, body up the baseball and take it. But that's probably my favorite coaching memory of you for sure.
Do you remember taking the ball off the chest?
I do. And I remember thinking, what am I doing? But there was no going back, and I was trying to prove a point. So there's probably a lot of stories that are I could put them in my own book for dumb things that Coach McConnell did growing up with his sons.
Well, I like this. So you had no glove. You were just going out there barehanded, just trying to show how you could let a ball stay and go off of you. And you could have used your bare hands and snagged the ball just to protect your chest from getting hit, but you took one right in the chest to try to prove a point to the team.
Yep. Get your body in front of it. Get down. Ball takes a bad hop. If your body's in front of it, you're going to knock it down barehanded, pick it up, and make throw.
Yeah.
And that was what we were working on, and the kids weren't doing it, so I figured I needed to be an example.
Well, if that didn't show you what to do, I don't know what would.
Oh, I mean, you know, I don't know how much it was effective because we all saw you take about, you know, like a full line drive off of the chest standing at third base, and we were all like, oh, my God.
Nobody wanted to do it after that.
Yeah.
I'm sure not.
But it was a memory that I will never forget.
Did you at least tell the kids after you took one, if that happens to you, use your glove. Do not let the ball hit you in the chest like it just hit me.
I probably didn't. I probably made my way off the field and slowly hid while the other coach took over and ran the rest of the drills.
There's a good one. Yeah, like I said, it was animated coaching for sure, and it was Pops was the best, you know, coach ever. Every parent wanted him to coach their kid growing up, and he was awesome. But there were some animated moments, taking balls off chest. I remember you snapping a Fungo bat across your knee.
Bo Jackson style. I like that.
Yeah.
Fungos are easier.
Yeah. They are.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But there were some animated moments.
All right. Favorite memory, as Adrian mentioned, for you of watching your son Cade here so far. It doesn't have to just be UTEP. It could be anything.
From last year, you know, the easy thing and definitely up the ladder was going to Florida International and seeing him make his first start. But you go back a week before that. You know, we watch every game. Deanna and I sit at home and watch every game. And our big thing was, there's Cade. You know, there he is on the sideline. I saw his helmet. I saw his last name. And knowing that Cade, his dream, and he's talked to you guys about it numerous times, of being a Division I quarterback and playing. So when he got in that game against Louisiana Tech at the very end, that was like, Deanna and I were jumping up and down at home and going crazy, and it was all for, you know, a two minute drive, but it was such a special moment because it happened. It was real.
And you didn't know if there would be another opportunity at that time. You're thinking, okay, great, this is, you know, you don't know. For all you know, this could have been it. It could have been that 2 minutes was all you had that season.
Absolutely, because obviously, you know, Kevin was in and went down with an injury, and so did Jake. And that's when we were sitting there, I was watching them go to commercial, and I saw the trainers come out, and I told Deanna, I said, Cade's going in the game because Kevin has to come out now. Yeah. Those guys have to come out. Cade's going to at least go in to take the snap and at least be on the field. And so when he came back, and I think it was a fourth down play, and he threw the ball and got whacked pretty good. But then when he came out for that last 2 minute drive, you know, that was when it really hit of, you know, you've worked your tail off for years and years and years, and this has been something you've wanted to do forever. And regardless of the situation and regardless of whether it was meaningful or meaningless in the game, it was real, and he did it, and it was that last year was our special moment.
More in a moment as we continue right now with both Cade and Sean McConnell here on the program, but let's go to Adrian and get this SportsCenter update. Two now past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. By the way, guys, last night that game between Iowa and LSU was epic. Most watched a game of all time in women's college basketball. And I'm just I'll ask the two of you this question. Do you feel right now with both Caitlin Clark and what you saw with Angel Reese and then later on that game between UConn and USC where UConn got the victory, is women's basketball just at a level that it's never been at before in terms of just skill level, quality, athletes? We've had great players over the years play college basketball. There's no doubt, women especially. But is it just different when you're watching some of the, like what we saw yesterday between LSU and Iowa?
It is. And the reason that it is a combination of two things. Number one, the level of play is increasing. You know, when you watch players like Caitlin Clark pull up from the logo on a consistent basis and make them, I mean, it's electrifying. It's the same reason why we love watching Steph Curry and Damian Lillard and guys like that. You know, it's just it's exciting to watch, plain and simple. And then you mix that with the fact that, you know, everybody, we're all trying to push, you know, awareness for women's basketball and other women's sports. And you combine those two, and then you get more eyes, more attention, more social media presence, and then you get the clips, you know, right? That's an underrated part of awareness in sports is the clips. When you're scrolling through your phone, even though, you know, a lot of people may not turn on a WNBA game or they may not turn on a women's college basketball game, but when you're scrolling through your phone and you're seeing these clips, you're like, wow, that is exciting. That is something that I would enjoy watching. And you're sending and you're like, look at this. This is crazy. You just continue to get more eyes on it and the popularity increases.
Well, I think, too, the younger players from a while back are now coaches, and they were dynamic players. They're now in the leadership roles, and they're creating a different vibe in the sport. They're creating a different sport. They're creating a different basketball game than maybe what was played at that level 20 years ago. They're bringing their experience into it, which is taking it up another notch.
I believe it. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Ruben from Central as we continue here on Sports Talk. Ruben, welcome aboard. What's happening?
Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Sure, Rube.
Listen, you know, I've been listening to Cade, you know, on the show here for the last couple of weeks since you guys have had him on, and I want to say he's doing an amazing job, and it doesn't surprise me. I tell you, I got the opportunity to see Cade when he first came to the campus, and I got to shoot him during his visit. I got to meet his dad and, you know, everybody else that came with him and stuff. And I got to tell you, I shot a lot of kids in the last 3 years that I was shooting for UTEP. But one of the ones that really stood out to me was Cade. And I got to tell you, you know, you can tell a lot about the character of a person, the way that he or she addresses you, even though they don't know you. And I got to tell you, every single time that I've seen Cade, from the day that I shot him that day on his visit to the very last time I saw him, which was probably about a week or so ago, it's always yes, sir, and no, sir. And I tell you what, from a grumpy old man to have somebody like Cade address you like that just really says a lot about him. And during my time, you know, shooting UTEP football and stuff, I really, really was excited when Cade finally got into that game that his dad and he were talking about. If there's a young man on that team that plays the quarterback position, he's the one that truly needs to have a real serious look at for this coming season. And I mean that with all my heart, because I've watched him at practice for the last 3 years. I've been around him, and I tell you, he's just a class act from the word go. And I had to call in and say that because, like I said before, I truly mean that with all my heart. And Cade, I want you to know, bro, I wish you nothing but success, and I pray to God that the coaching staff at UTEP gives you an honest look, because you deserve it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's always a pleasure seeing you out there. It's never a bad time. We always share a smile and a high five or a fist bump.
Yes, sir.
And that goes a long way. So thank you for everything that you just said. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you out there again soon.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that. Ruben, I appreciate that too, and I'll be careful because I could get really emotional really quick. But we always love seeing you out there. You're always there taking a family picture for us and saying hi and shaking hands, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, you're more than welcome, and like I said, I meant everything I said, and I wish you nothing but the best, and I look forward to seeing you this coming year, and hopefully it's not just on the sidelines. So with that, God bless you and your family, and Steve, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you as always, bud.
Have a
great night.
Take care, Rube. Gentlemen, that's how we end the segment right there. That is a good way to walk this one off. I know you've got meetings coming up. Sean, you've got a date with Pinky. God bless you for that. You guys are going to have a blast tonight. So appreciate you both being here. Thanks for the time. Welcome back to El Paso, and enjoy yourself over the 24 hours you're going to be here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here and taking the time and spending it with the boy and with you guys, and going to have a good time tonight too.
Absolutely. We'll see you back here Thursday. I'll be back in just a couple days.
Good. And add Adrian's cell and my cell to your chain with your dad, so anytime he decides to text in the show, we all get the messages, so we make sure we're all on our toes.
Perfect.
All right?
Sounds good.
All right.
I'd love that.
All right. Good job, guys. That's, again, Cade, Sean McConnell, as we continue. Come back to wrap up hour number two in a moment. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue. Coming up this Friday, adios mio cochina. That's right. Man, oh man. They've got a terrific food menu. They call it unique with elevated Mexican cuisine. How about this?
Not a cochina, Steve.
What's that?
A cocina.
I thought it was a cochina. Cocina?
Cocina is like if you're doing something bad.
Oh, geez. That's all I need
to say. Or messy.
I should have gone with you.
But it's okay. I love this place.
By the way, how is cochina spelled?
Great question. Great question.
Cocina. So, ay Dios mío, Cocina. Have you been there before?
Yes, I have. Great
have you
tacos.
Have you had the bone marrow and octopus tacos?
Okay, no, I haven't. But I am looking at those on their social media page, Steve. They got ramen that they've got as well. Menudo all weekend long.
Corn ribs.
Yes, that sounds good too.
This looked really interesting. And it comes up Friday at 10 a.m. And it's going to be available for dining deals. They are located, by the way, 2909 Pershing Drive, right there in Five Points. There's some great places in Five Points. Love the fact that Adios Mio Cocina is part of this.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Five Points, a lot of new businesses, new restaurants, venues, bars popping up there. So you can make a stop to Adios Mio Cocina and then go out. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, by the way. Their kitchen's open all the way till 9:30, and then they're a bar from 11 to 2 in the morning. So there you go.
You know what they call it? Real Mexican food on this side of the border.
I love it, man. Good stuff. Adiosmio915.com to check out their full menu.
I'm looking at their, first off, I'm looking at their brunch, which is served every day from 11 to 4. Kebab and egg pitas. They've got huevos rancheros, one of my all-time faves. The concha burger as well. And then they also have lunch specials like tacos, half-off appetizers, chilaquiles, which you can't go wrong. And some great apps, too. They got a little bit of everything. A little bit of everything out there.
Yeah, I really got to check. You know, I got to go in person, Steve, for the brunch because I've actually never tried the brunch before. But I got to try that steak and egg pita. That sounds fantastic. Skirt steak grilled, served with a sunny side egg up. And it's got things like fries, avocado pico on the side as well.
Adios Mio Cocina. And that's going to be happening this Friday, 10 a.m. on Dining Deals. Excited about that. We need to go together. We need to go hit Five Points,
the two of us,
one day, and just have some fun out there.
Yeah, by the way, their chef, Enrique Lozano, I would say he's known really well throughout the region. So good stuff right there. And, yeah, we need to go there for sure, Steve. And then afterward, maybe we'll do a little round around Five Points and check out all the other establishments.
I love that. By the way, indoor and outdoor seating. They have an outdoor patio as well as indoor seating. So that's really cool, too. So, again, go to the Must Read Bar, Dining Deals. By the way, we got great deals still out there right now, which you can take advantage of. 600ESPNElPaso.com for all the latest. All right. Meantime, as we continue here on the show, 12.3 million viewers for Iowa LSU. That is a record. That is terrific. That also makes me feel like the women's championship on ABC is going to do very, very well.
Yeah, actually, I think when you're talking about comparing those ratings to even like, and it's unfair to compare a lot of these ratings, but if you compare them to like NBA ratings, I actually think they're going to be comparable or even better than those NBA ratings that you've seen this past year, like All-Star Weekend, so forth, Pro Bowl festivities, stuff like that. And I think it's just a testament to the stars in the sport right now, like Caitlin Clark, like Angel Reese. People are watching because of the figures of the sport. And then now, Steve, I was ready to pencil, or, you know, I didn't even pencil them in. I put them in pen. USC going to the Final Four. That didn't happen. We had Joe Fan, our resident UConn fan, who predicted a 15-point loss last night, and then UConn ends up winning. So it's going to be UConn versus Iowa, Caitlin Clark versus Paige Beckers. I'm in for that matchup just as much as I would have been for Clark versus Juju Watkins.
Well, first off, you know what? UConn, USC, Iowa, LSU, it's probably one of the greatest doubleheaders ever for women's college basketball. And think about what happened last night. You get Ronel Blanco throwing a no-no for the Houston Astros in his eighth career start. He's a 30-year-old who essentially nobody knows. He goes the distance and throws a no-hitter yesterday. That was a big story in itself against Toronto. Then Devin Booker drops 52 last night for Phoenix. You had a really good storyline. In fact, it's his league-high tying third game of 50 or more this season. So that's fantastic. And then you get Damian Lillard and Patrick Beverley tweeting about Juju Watkins and Caitlin Clark. So it's pretty cool. It seems like everything is crossed over perfectly in the sports world right now.
Yeah, and then pucks are on top of that as well. Hockey action's really heating up in a big way, too. So it's like this is the good time of year because you get a little hangover after the Super Bowl, and you're like, man, I'm so hungry for more football. But it's a good break. It's time to take a pause on the football side. And let's let all the other sports come in. Let's get excited about baseball that's going on right now, which had a fantastic opening weekend and now transitioning into a nice second week here. Let's talk about the NBA, which is getting ready for the playoffs, and same with hockey, getting ready for the playoffs just right around the corner. And then, of course, on top of all of that, we've got the women's college basketball tournament and the men's college basketball tournament and some of the secondary sports on top of that as well.
And by the way, in the NBA, there's a lot of parity right now in the league. Really, in the East, you could go from 2-6 and say that there's only four games separating Milwaukee and the Pacers right now. That's how much parity there is in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting when it comes to like the early round matchups, but when it comes to like winning the East, it's Boston versus everybody, right? And who can actually beat the Celtics at this point right now at full strength? And it's not just Jason Tatum. It's like Jaylen Brown, who's played great. He's played up to that $380 million contract extension that he signed in the offseason. So Celtics versus everybody right now.
Look, if I was a Knicks fan, all I want to see is Julius Randle in the playoffs. That's it. I mean, they haven't had him in months. So, you know, that team is right. They're fourth right now. They were third. They made their moves. I just hope that Julius Randle can get healthy in time for a playoff push.
Yeah, I don't like the matchup against the Magic, although the Magic don't do great in fourth quarter offense, so I think the Knicks have the advantage in that, and I still like them in that series. Knicks are approaching a very interesting offseason because the Donovan Mitchell saga with Cleveland seems to be coming to the end. His fit alongside Jalen Brunson, to my opinion, Steve, is non-existent, so if that's the case, who do the Knicks go after this offseason? Like, do they push for LeBron? Do they go after Karl Anthony Towns from the Wolves? And do they make a legit Eastern Conference run this postseason? I think it's going to be an interesting couple months for that team. I also look at the Heat. They could trend upward. And the 76ers, who get Joel Embiid back tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who've been the best team or one of the best teams out of the West.
Now, as far as the Knicks go, again, because Randall's shoulder is not healed and Ananobi's been injured, they haven't really been full strength since they made all their trades. That's been the problem right now. The Knicks have had to rely on piecing this thing together over the last few months.
Yeah, and that's why it's so impressive that they're actually winning these games, right? Like, Josh Hart, he becomes, like, the guy who's stepping up for them in late-game situations. And it's, you know, these other guys, like Jalen Brunson, who's going toe-to-toe with Victor Wembanyama in that game, where it's like both sides don't have anything, and you just got to see what both of them have here left in the tank.
Two down, one to go. Actually, we'll take you 30 minutes up till the bottom of the hour. Tim Haggerty will join us as well from the ballpark, so stay with us. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso.
Lewis and Adrian Broaddus.
Here we go. Final hour, everybody. Final 30 minutes. Buckle up with you as we get going here on opening night for El Paso Chihuahuas baseball. Excited about that. They've started their season last Friday. They took 2 out of 3 in Albuquerque, and tonight, home opener as they get ready to do battle against Round Rock. Excited, Adrian, ready to go. We'll be there tomorrow. We'll be out broadcasting from Section 211, doing Sports Talk Live tomorrow from the ballpark, and then the opportunity to be able to watch the Wednesday night ball game. That's ready to go, too.
Yeah, I'm so fired up, man. I'm just ready to get back at Southwest University Park for this, for this Chihuahuas baseball season. Fired up that Tim Haggerty is back with us for another great season as well. Caught a lot of his calls over the weekend too, and man, you know, he's just a pro's pro. We talked to him a lot last week about his approach, his preparation, what he was doing to kind of get ready for the season, and now we're really here. We're full swing, and it's the home opener tonight. Southwest University Park will have it, 6:35 first pitch here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
Man, I can't wait. I just can't wait for it. I think it's going to be that's really what it's all about, and more than anything else, I think the opportunity to be a part of something that has been already such a big, big part of so many lives. I mean, let's be honest, not just tonight, but Friday night. They've got the first premium giveaway. Tonight's the rally towels. They've got promotions every night. I mean, it just seems really cool that, you know, for fans, a lot of fans look forward to this time of the year tonight. This is a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you don't necessarily have to love baseball to go to watch El Paso Chihuahuas baseball. You could just be somebody who's looking for a great night out, you know, experiencing the ballpark, experiencing the great ambiance and the environment that the game day atmosphere has. But if you are a baseball diehard, then you actually get some high quality action, right? You get to see some high level prospects come through the system. Last year, it was Fernando Tatis Jr. who graced El Paso and Southwest University Park to really start off the season. This year, I'm excited about all the names who might end up coming here, whether it's against the Chihuahuas on the road or here at Southwest University Park.
Yep, and fans getting a chance to get autographs, meet the players. That's also something that's very, very cool. In fact, I've already seen a couple of people, our friends, Ravius, showing off a couple of baseballs that were given to kids, his kids. So how about that? They show up to the game, they get a couple balls, and we're still about a half an hour away from first pitch.
Yeah, I feel like those players who are returning from last year, they know it. They know that the fans get excited and they create a great game day atmosphere for the Chihuahuas. But for the players who are coming here to El Paso for the first time, I'm sure they're going to be welcomed with the great crowd that is there tonight, the cheers, the applause, you know, everything from all the fans tonight for opening night. It makes you excited. It makes you proud that El Paso is a city that has AAA baseball and that we're talking about yet another season of just continued excellence from the Chihuahuas. And yeah, it makes you proud that that this is going on here in the city.
I'm with you. We talked women's basketball the end of last hour. How about the fact that right now, this is interesting, the head of the NCAA women's basketball tournament is pushing to review potential changes to the event's format this summer, a year sooner than previously planned. So here's what's happening. The Women's Basketball Committee was scheduled to revisit its decision to hold its first two rounds of the tournament at campus sites for highly ranked teams and to hold its second weekend games in two sites rather than four after the 2025 championship. So they believe that they say they've seen enough data about the growth of the sport to consider changes this year. So there we go. In fact, maybe we will start to see cities bid for regionals like the men and not worry about having to put them at the bid, you know, and give the best teams that home court advantage through the first couple rounds of the tournament.
Yeah, and just to avoid what happened over the weekend, right, yep. In Portland. I mean, that was just the incident that I think it was like the icing on the cake and just the nail in the coffin that made the NCAA come out with a statement early in this week to say that there's going to be changes coming because that can't happen anymore, where coaches have to meet before tip-off to agree on a three-point line because the regulation or the measurement wasn't accurate. That's awful. That's basic stuff. That's fundamental access. You think that would be happening in a men's
no.
Sweet 16, in a NBA playoff or a championship or finals or anything like that? No, of course that wouldn't happen.
No, that's a good point. So they do need to make they do need to fix some things. There's no doubt about it. In fact, Tara Vandeveer probably, you know, was ready to have a heart attack. Think about that. She's been coaching Stanford forever, one of the best coaches ever to play, ever to be in the game, and realizing that her team was playing on a court in Portland with the misdrawn three-point line. I mean, that's just, you can't have that. You absolutely cannot have that.
Yeah, it's fundamental. It's basic facility necessities that this sport needs. And I like the idea to make one centralized area where, hey, there's not going to be an NBA game tomorrow, or you're not going to have to flip it around and turn it into a hockey arena, or a concert's not coming there late in the season. I like the idea for campuses and campus matchups. Maybe you get more fans to travel out to these yeah. different campus locations or sites that they end up playing these games to create a real atmosphere at these games.
But they're smart. They know that there's more interest in the game now than ever before, so why would you not want to strike when the iron's hot? Why would you want to possibly wait and miss out on an opportunity when you've got more excitement and enthusiasm for the women's tournament than you have in years?
Sure, and another part to this as well is the fact that on the women's side, I'm curious, when's the next time they're going to want to renegotiate the TV deal? Because,
maybe.
You know, Fox Sports, ESPN, those two are going to probably bid a good dollar to try to retain women's college basketball, knowing that the track record and momentum is there.
I'll be honest, I would love to to see a March Madness app for women's basketball like the men. Why can't you just download the March Madness app and have access to all the games, men and women? Why is it that, you know, it's got to be different?
Yeah, I think the accessibility feature is going to be one of the things that's highlighted most. Yeah. Just making these games to where everybody can watch it. I love the fact that it's on national television. ABC will have the Final Four, but let's continue things like that to where streaming and social media, apps and all of that are consistent.
All right, 10 pass as we continue here on Sports Talk, and we'll be back with more in a moment. But first, we got Charlie, one last traffic update. Then Hags will join us live from the ballpark, and he'll take us up to first pitch. All coming up right here, 600 ESPN El Paso.